The game's up, Scarlet. There are no more bullets left in that gun.
Oh, come on. You don't think I'm going to fall for that old trick?
It's not a trick. There was one shot at Mr. Body in the study, two for the chandelier, two at the lounge door, and one for the singing telegram.
That's not six.
1 + 2 + 2 + 1.
Uh-uh. There was one shot that got the chandelier. That's 1 + 2 + 1 + 1.
Even if you were right, that would be 1 + 1 + 2 + 1, not 1 + 2 + 1 + 1.
Okay, fine. 1 + 2 + 1. Shut up! The point is, there is one bullet left in this gun, and guess who's gonna get it?
Welcome to Couch Potato Theater here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Couch Potato Theater is the podcast that features cult classics, guilty pleasures, and fan favorite films here on the Fandom Podcast Network. These are the films that are just so good, even though you might own a digital copy or a Blu-ray or even a Criterion collection of this movie. If it pops up on your television, you're going to watch it no matter what scene you're in, and you're just going to sit back and enjoy it. And that is what the definition of this show is all about. My name is Kyle Wagner. I'm your host here for this very special Couch Potato Theater here on the Fandom Podcast Network, as we are proud to present the 1985 film Clue. But of course, you know what? We have to have a motley crew of characters, especially for a movie like Clue. And the first person who came to mind is the person who was the inspiration for this particular podcast. Of course, you hear her over on Union Federation, as well as several other podcasts here. The lovely Haley Stoddard is here with us for this special edition Couch Potato Theater. Now, I got to ask, are you more of a rope or a wrench or lead pipe kind of girl?
I'm going to go with a lead pipe.
Yeah. That seems quite up your alley.
But again, I didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. She has the innocent face, too. That's what's really disturbing about it. But we have a new voice here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Somebody, Miss Haley, invited to join us, and we are more than glad to have him here to talk about this great film. Carl Wunder is here. Carl, welcome to the Fandom Podcast Network, and welcome to Couch Potato Theater.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to talk about this film. It's one of my favorites.
So, we've gone back and forth numerous times on
many,
Twitter.
Many times.
Like sending GIFs back and forth from this movie. Yeah,
there are a lot to be had from this movie. So I want to thank everybody for joining us. But before we get started about finding out who done it, let's tell you where you can find not only Couch Potato Theater, but all the great shows of the Fandom Podcast Network. And it all starts on our master feed on fpnet.podbean.com. Of course, too, you can download the Podbean app and search for the Fandom Podcast Network. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Of course, visit our Facebook page, too, where we try to keep you up to date with all the latest happenings in fandom. Just search for the Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us directly with your theories of whodunit. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network and on Twitter at FanPod Network. Of course, I'm Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Haley, where can people find you on social media these days?
You can find me on our Facebook group, but you can also find me on Twitter. I am at Trekkie01D. And if you would love to have a conversation just in Clue GIFs, I am down for that.
And Carl, where can people find you in the great digital world?
You can find me poking around on Twitter as well. My handle is at ListeningToFilm. It's also the name of my blog, ListeningToFilm.net.
Definitely check that out because I've heard stories and you know, I've seen the Clue exchanges back and forth. It gets interesting. But there are a couple of ways to support the Fandom Podcast Network as well. Of course, we love reviews, especially 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. Every review we get there gets us more noticed out there. So again, we love those 5-star reviews, but we love the reviews in general because, as always, we strive to make better podcasts to feed your ears around here. And of course, we also have our TeePublic store. Go to TeePublic and search for the Fandom Podcast Network, where there's now masks there, Haley, because we want to keep our listeners healthy and safe.
That's so awesome.
I think a Union Federation mask would look good on you, Haley, and you know, disguise definitely. You for some of your nighttime we wonder about activities. So
yes, indeed.
So again, go to tpublic.com, search for the Fandom Podcast Network or Couch Potato Theater or any of the great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network where you can find the logos for all of our shows. But let's get into Couch Potato Theater Clue. Of course, this movie came out in 1985. We've got a brief plot description. This movie is about seven guests, a butler and a maid, who are all involved in a series of murders. The guests all meet at Hill House, where you learn that Professor Plum works in Washington, D.C., where everyone else lives. Colonel Mustard is a client of Miss Scarlet's, who is the ex-employer of Yvette, the maid, who had an affair with the husband of Mrs. White, etc., etc. Blackmailer Mr. Body gives each guest a weapon and tells him or her to kill Butler Wadsworth to avoid being exposed. Add in Mrs. Peacock's craziness and Mr. Green's clumsiness and meet a whole group tangled in a web of murder, lies, and hilarity. Even the plot description is hard to read for this.
Yes, it definitely is. I love this. So poster's just so fun.
No, go ahead, Haley. Give us some thoughts on the poster, because it is a very fun poster.
Well, it definitely is. You know, it's kind of got almost like a game type feel to it. And, you know, there's the line. So Clue is my favorite board game. I have loved this game my entire life. And when you're playing the game, you have to say, all right, it was so-and-so in the room, whatever room you're in, with the whatever murder weapon. And so I love that they've put this on the movie poster. It is fantastic. And I love the characters. They're all in the windows. Hilarity. Just, I love it.
What about you, Carl? Any thoughts on the movie poster?
No, I totally agree with what Haley said. I think it does a great job of setting up the way that it's come from the game. There's the tagline, it's not just a game anymore, which is, you know, clearly a tie-in. I don't think there's ever been a movie that has been based off of a game or something like that has worked quite as well as this one has. I guess a murder mystery tends to lend itself well to a movie or a story like this. But I love this, the way it's, you know, the little labels. It looks like one of those pages out of a book that you open the windows to see the little pictures underneath and stuff. It looks cool.
Yeah, I also love the fact that they're each in each of their pictures is one of the possible murder weapons. So that just makes it great. And I remember seeing this actually at the theater. I'm like, they're doing a movie about a board game. But it was a very cool poster. But Haley, would you be so kind as to tell us some of the movie taglines? This had several fun ones.
So, the movie that makes a scene of the crime. That one's interesting. I like that it's not just a game anymore. Like, that really lends to, like, you're like, all right, was it just a game? Murder, madness, mysteries, and mayhem. More fun than you can imagine. I agree. Seven suspects, six weapons, five bodies, and three endings. And Cluedo isn't just a board game anymore, because that's the original version of in the UK they call it Cluedo instead of Clue.
Yeah, no, I think the best one is it's not just a game anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. just really nails it home. But they're all have some fun ones. Carl, any of these stand out for you?
No, I think they picked the right one for the poster. Some of them get a little long. The three endings one I'm curious about, just because. I could be wrong, but I think when they first released it, you only got to see one of the endings. And it was kind of a random thing. So, yeah. I mean, it makes you want to go back and see the film again a couple times to see, make sure you get to see all the three different endings that you don't get going into the theater.
Oh, yes. We will be discussing that. But let's talk about where the first time was that you saw this and the effect you had it on the first time that you saw what kind of effect it had. What do you think of the film? And Haley, since you are the one who brought Clue to us, I'm going to go ladies first.
So I honestly don't know. I was three when this movie came out. So obviously I didn't see it in the theaters. I'm pretty sure that I more than likely rented it from Blockbuster when I first saw it. I can guarantee you, just because I do love the game. And so that's more than likely. And I just loved it ever since. Anytime it was on television, I would watch it, rented it. I'm sure more than one time. And now I own it on DVD and I know it so much that my kid watches it and I don't even have to be watching it. And I'm saying lines and whatnot. So it's fun. But I love I love this movie.
Carl, what about you? When was the first time you saw Clue?
So I'm having a hard time remembering exactly when it was too. I do remember playing the game a lot as a kid with my parents, and I'm pretty sure they recorded it off of like Showtime or something back when people did those sorts of things. I know I was pretty young in that I didn't get a lot of the more risque stuff that they, you know, the dialogue and things. I didn't quite get all of that when I was a kid. In thinking back, I'm kind of surprised that my parents let me watch it when they did. but yeah, I was, I'm going to guess maybe 8 or 9, something along those lines. Maybe a little younger, but I'd been a big fan of murder mysteries in general. My parents were the type that would watch all of the BBC murder mystery shows, the Poirot's and the Sherlock Holmes and those types of shows on TV. And my mom was a big Murder, She Wrote fan too, for all the years that was on. So I grew up watching these types of murder stories. So I was really interested in the movie, plus because it was a game, and just the fact that it's absolutely a hilarious movie. and it's one that I've seen countless times since. And I never hesitate to have an excuse to put it on whenever I just feel like watching something fun.
Yeah, no, I feel like the old man in the room. I think I was 10 when this movie came.
Sorry, Kyle.
It's okay. I actually did not see this movie until it hit video too, and I think that's where a lot of people saw this. I know it didn't do that great in the theater, and I think it got the cult following on home video. This is an example of a lot of 80s movies that really maybe not that strong in the theater, but developed a huge following on video. But I remember seeing this for the first time, and it's just, it's at such a kinetic pace too. It's so frantic. And we'll get into the cast, but I mean, Tim Curry is just amazing in this film. This is, to me, one of his most memorable films. And, you know, you forget just how star-studded the cast is when you consider the actors of the 80s and with this cast. And I know we're going to get into that, but first I want to ask you guys too, what are some of your favorite scenes? Carl, you're the new man here, so I want to give you a crack at this first.
So this is a bit of a cheat. I love all of Mr. Green's scenes. Michael McKean, I think, is the MVP of this movie, as far as I'm concerned, just the way he plays this character. And then the way he's revealed at the very end of the movie just hits all the right notes for me. I love, and just the whole last back end of the movie when it's Tim Curry running from room to room, explaining how everything happened and what went down and just the people trying to keep up with him and everything. I think it's just the way it's staged and everything. I just love it all.
Haley?
It's so hard to say a favorite scene because I love everything in this film. The pacing is wonderful and all the characters are just so funny and interesting. The one thing in prepping for this, and I never had noticed this before, is that all of the characters' cars are the color of their pseudonym. But I can't say that I necessarily have one scene or certain scenes that are my favorite because I just, beginning to end, this film is so fun. I'm like Carl. I love Mr. Green. The older I've gotten, I think his scenes are my favorites. I think when I first started watching this movie, I liked Miss Scarlet best, but Mr. Green he steals it from beginning to end. One thing I do love about this is the running gags in the film. So, you know, Wadsworth, he walks up to the door and he steps in the dog poop. And then subsequently everybody like smells their shoes and looks at their shoes, you know, to see if it's from them. That running gag and the running gag of, now I've forgotten what it was. I wrote it down. I'm going to have to scroll in my notes. So go ahead, Kyle.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the interesting things about this film is that it's a running gag throughout the movie. And so it's hard to identify just individual scenes because of that. And I think that's one of the things that makes this movie unique. But one of the scenes that I always kind of found funny is when they're trying to make it look like everybody's partied out when the cop is going into the other rooms with the bodies and everything like that. That to me was always highly entertaining. And yeah, I'm with you. I think Mr. Green definitely grows as on you as this, as the more viewings of this movie. I still think, I think for my book, Tim Curry is still the MVP, but it's, it's close. But every, the thing about it too, is the banter is just so back and forth and so intelligent and witty that I think that's what makes this film really stand out more than just any particular scene. It's, you've got to take this as a whole, not just, oh my gosh, there's this one scene that just completely stands out.
Yeah. And the thing,
Go ahead, Carl.
No, the thing that amazes me so much about this as a comedy is that it has so many different kinds of comedy in it. And I would argue that they all work because you have this witty banter back and forth, the dialogue. Like, I think you have it in the notes, the scene when the cop comes out and Wadsworth is saying, oh, I can explain what's going on. And the cop says, you don't have to. And he says, it's a free country. And like, I didn't know it was that free. And then the line about, you know, are you, is the FBI accustomed to cleaning up after multiple murders? And he says, of course, why do you think it's run by a man called Hoover? And like, just really witty lines like that. And then you have this slapstick physical comedy. Like, the one that always like makes me laugh is when they're running around in the dark and Wadsworth is trying to find the door, and he goes through the door and then he finds another, what he thinks is another door, and he turns the shower on himself.
Another door?
Yeah, exactly. Like, but like, the, these things happen in the same movie. Like, that you have a dialogue-driven comedy, but you also have this crazy physical stuff that's also really funny. It's just like every piece comes together really well in this.
Yeah.
Hey, so, did you find your note, Haley?
I did. So it's the running gag line of, there's just one thing that I don't understand.
One thing?
Like, it runs throughout the entire film. It's just like, just one thing or, I don't get? Like, to, really?
No. To make a long story short. Too late.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's another great running gag.
And I think one of the standout moments, now that I think about it as we're talking, is when Yvette and Mr. Green are standing at the bottom of the stairs to go up into the attic. And then they're still standing, like, it cuts to everybody else, and then they're still just standing there like, you go first. No, you.
There's a great scene, and it's very underplayed, but I think it stands out very well with Michael McKean and Mr. Green and Yvette, where she's trying to like hold his hand or grab his arm, and he keeps like just pushing very underscoredly, kind of just pushes her away as they're going up the steps. Like, he doesn't want any part of her at all. So, but we were talking about the witty banner. So, Haley, would you care to help me? We'll kind of go back and forth on some of these quotes from the film. So, I'll let ladies first.
Oh, so I'm going to be Colonel Mustard?
Well, no, well, but you just read the whole, that whole section of the quote.
Okay, got it. Just checking. Everything all right? Yep. Two corpses. Everything's fine.
That says so much about that movie, this movie just right here. But to me, this is one of my all-time favorite quotes of the film. They all did it. But if you want to know who killed Mr. Body, I did. In the hall with the revolver. Okay, Chief, take him away. I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
No, you got to say it slowly. I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
I mean, hit Michael McKean's delivery on that line is absolutely perfect. Okay, we'll do a little back and forth here, Haley. I'll let you be Wadsworth. I'll be the cop.
I can explain everything.
You don't have to.
I don't?
Don't worry. There's nothing illegal about any of this.
Are you sure?
Of course. This is America.
I see.
It's a free country. Don't you know that?
I didn't know it was that free.
Okay, I will be Professor Plum. What are you afraid of? A fate worse than death?
No, just death. Isn't that enough? All right. I hardly think it will enhance your reputation at the UN, Professor Plum, if it's revealed that you have been implicated not only in the adultery with one of your patients, but in her death and the deaths of five other people.
You don't know what kind of people they have at the Union. UN, I might go up in their estimation.
I love that. Like, he says it so subtly. Like, unless you're really paying attention, you don't catch it because the camera moves kind of away from him as he's saying it. But I think it's so funny.
Carl, would you like to get in on some quotes here?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
All right.
Haley, why don't you play Wadsworth in this time?
Sure. You see, like the Mounties, we always get our man.
Mrs. Peacock was a man?
Slap!
Oh, that one is so good.
Okay. okay, Carl, you play Wadsworth this time.
All right.
Can I come in and use your phone?
Of course you may, sir. You may use the one in the, no. You could use the one in this, no. Would you be kind enough to wait in the, library?
Okay, I'm going to let you and Haley have the last two quotes. Haley, why don't you just stick with Wadsworth for these last two quotes?
All right.
Go ahead, Carl.
Is there going to be a cover-up?
Isn't that in the public interest? What could be gained by exposure?
But is the FBI in the habit of cleaning up after multiple murder?
Yes. Why do you think it's run by a man called Hoover?
I think we all three can get on this one.
Yep, we can. What is your top secret job, Colonel?
I can tell you, he's working on the secret of the next fusion bomb.
How did you know that?
Can you keep a secret?
Yes.
So can I.
The dialogue in this movie is just perfect, and everybody in this film has amazing comic timing, and it just works so well. Of course, this movie was directed by Jonathan Lynn, written by Jonathan Lynn and John Landis. So some chops behind this film too, but I think the thing that makes this movie more than anything else is the cast in this film. And we start with Eileen Brennan as Mrs. Peacock, Tim Curry, of course, as Wadsworth, Madeline Kahn as Mrs. White, Christopher Lloyd playing Professor Plum, Michael McKean as Mr. Green, Martin Mull as Colonel Mustard, Leslie Ann Warren as Miss Scarlet, Colleen Camp as Yvette, Lee Ving as Mr. Body, Bill Henderson was the cop, Jane Widland was the singing telegram girl, Jeffrey Kramer was the motorist, and Kelly Nakahara was the cook, and of course we cannot forget one Dr. Johnny Fever, Howard Hessman, uncredited as the chief.
You ever this given any thought to the... Just, no, sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry. No, I was just going to say, this cast is phenomenal. Go ahead, Carl.
No, it's too late. I was just saying, have you ever given any thought to the Kingdom of Heaven?
So, okay.
Wait, Whistling Dixie.
There you go. Okay, so the truth of the matter is most people, when they think of this movie, they think of Tim Curry first and foremost. I think that's a safe assumption.
Yeah.
So let's start with him, because I think this was really a performance for him that really put him on the map here in the United States, at any rate. A lot of people started realizing who Tim Curry was. Obviously, you can go back to several things he's done in the past, but I think for a new generation in the 80s, this was kind of something outside of maybe Rocky Horror Picture Show that people really started to realize who Tim Curry was.
Definitely. He did do another 80s film that you cannot find anywhere unless you look for it on YouTube, called The Worst Witch. Has a small role in that, but I loved him in that too from the 80s. So I've really enjoyed Tim Curry since then. He is phenomenal. Such a fantastic actor and really has good comedy chops. I think a lot of people don't necessarily realize how great his comedy is. I mean, I just love him.
What about you, Carl? Thoughts on Tim Curry?
No, I think he is the perfect part, or this is the perfect part for Tim Curry. I think the play the butler, but then to also be kind of the slapstick and the driving force behind the entire film. He really is a force of nature, I would say, in this film. It's certainly the first thing I think I've seen him in. Chronologically, when I was watching movies, I hadn't seen Rocky Horror Picture Show at this point yet, obviously. But yeah, it's the movie that I always think about when I think of Tim Curry. It's going to be Wadsworth.
Yeah. And it's a great cast from top to bottom, whether you're talking about Madeline Kahn, Martin Mull, who's always thought a very underrated 80s staple there, Haley.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's always just he you don't ever see him in a bad role. He always seems to he's like that puzzle piece that always fits in a film.
Definitely. And his character in this, I think, is just really great because clearly he's an idiot. Yeah. He pulls it off so well.
I got my money from my mommy and daddy dying.
You try to make me look stupid in front of the other guests.
You don't need any help from me, sir.
There are some great moments between him and Tim Curry in this film that are just epically, I mean, you're just laughing because it's just so insane between those two.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I love the bit with the, is there anybody else in the house?
Yeah. Are we sure there's anybody else on the podcast, Haley?
No.
Yes.
No meaning yes.
So we talked a little bit earlier too, how I think Michael McKean has been a lot more appreciated as the longer this movie has been out, because obviously he's kind of playing this like really clumsy, goofy, kind of seems like he's a whipped man character, which turns out to be about the farthest thing from the case, but he plays it off, the two opposites off so well, Carl.
He absolutely does. And, you know, as Haley keeps saying, that the through line, the running gag of him saying, I didn't do it, or I told you I didn't do it, or those sorts of things. Eight times, I'm being told, eight times he says that. And it turns out he's always the one who never is involved in any of the murders other than the very last one, I guess. But yeah, to see the way he kind of shrinks inside himself and just is like this little shell of a guy for most of this film. I love, there's that great little clip, and it's in a GIF that I've sent multiple times, where he's there with the cop in Wadsworth when the cop comes out after talking on the phone, and at one point Wadsworth just looks back at him and he puts this stupid smile on his face, like, yeah, exactly. And it's just, his timing is great.
We have Christopher Lloyd in this movie, Haley. And I think one of the most interesting things with Christopher Lloyd is he is now so identified as Doc Brown. You forget all the things that he's been in.
Yeah, no, Christopher Lloyd. I did not expect him in this role. And he's so well known for, you know, obviously Back to the Future. What did you think about him playing Professor Plum?
So this is going to sound silly. I didn't even recognize him for the longest time. So I grew up with the Star Trek films. So first time I saw Christopher Lloyd was playing the Klingon in Star Trek III, and then shortly after that as Doc Brown. And he's one of those guys that just can disappear into a part and be. Now I recognize him, of course, but at the time I had no idea it was the same guy. And to play this, I would say, sex-starved psychiatrist in some ways, is such a departure. He's always just hitting on people left and right, and he had the affair with the singing telegram girl, and who knows what else. He's trying to put the moves on Miss Scarlet multiple times, and he's just great. I could say that about everybody, I think, in this cast, though.
It's you and me, honey bunch.
Okay. I want to ask Carl something, because Haley and I had this conversation before we started the podcast tonight. I want to talk about Miss Scarlet, because how easy is it to mistake Leslie Ann Morn for Susan Sarandon in this movie? Because she looks like she's just been cloned Susan Sarandon in this film.
Absolutely. No, I agree with you. I probably wouldn't have known who Susan Sarandon was the first time I saw this, but yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying with the hair, the way it is, and the outfit she's wearing and everything. Yeah, definitely.
And just how she carries herself.
For sure.
But Haley, who else in the cast really was a standout for you?
You know, everybody does such a wonderful job. I love Mrs. Peacock. She's clearly got some issues and needs some therapy, because she's really uncomfortable with silence, as Professor Plum points out, because she's, you know, bumbling and talking and can't, like, not talk when they're all at dinner. And I feel really bad for her husband, because clearly she probably annoys a lot of people. But I think the one thing, as we were, you know, as I was prepping for this, that the singing telegram girl is the rhythm guitarist from the Go-Go's. And I was just like, well, that's just fun. I mean, how did they just ask her to, or did she say, hey, I want to be a part of this? Like, I want to know how this came about. But, and you know, honestly, when I was thinking about it, Mr. Body, he clearly just wants to rile everybody. I'm not sure, like, his character kind of fits, but then almost kind of doesn't. But I'm sure we'll get to it later, but I was reading trivia on this movie, and they picked him because I guess he was in a band called Fear, and they picked him because his name is Leaving, and Mr. Body is leaving.
Clever.
What about you, Carl? Anybody else in the cast who was a big standout for you?
So I definitely agree that Jane Wyland's a funny person that turns up. She's also in one of my other favorite later 80s films, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, because she plays Joan of Arc in that film. And since we haven't mentioned her yet, I have to give a shout out to Madeline Kahn. The way Mrs. White, who has gone through, I don't know how many husbands,
hers or other women's though. That's true.
We don't know yet.
and at least five.
Lines like, you know, husbands should be like Kleenex, soft, strong, and disposable.
Lines are where men are most vulnerable.
And then the one of the jokes that I didn't get, obviously, as a kid, was when she's talking about how she found her husband and then all the men crossed their legs at the same time on the couch. Just lines like that are great. And her wonderful Flames monologue that she made up on the spot there, I think, if I'm remembering correctly. So she's definitely a standout to me.
Mm-hmm. Her interesting screams as well.
Yes.
Yep, definitely. Yeah.
There's not somebody who doesn't shine in this cast. Everybody has their moments. Colleen Camp has some great moments as Yvette. A lot of her stuff is very underscored, and I really have an appreciation for that, how she did a lot of little things within her performance, you know, when she wasn't distracting every other man on the... But let's get into some details on this film. It had an hour and 34-minute runtime. Of course, it was released December 13th, 1985. It was a Christmas film. Nothing like a good Christmas mystery. Was rated PG, had a budget of $15 million, made just over $2 million in its opening weekend, and actually finished with a worldwide gross of $14,643,997,000. Didn't even make its budget back, but it didn't get a worldwide release either. It stayed basically in the States, guys, which is kind of unique when you think about it.
Yeah, that is really, really interesting. It's kind of sad, but like you were pointing out, you know, how many people love this film now and whatnot, you know? So it's an 80s film, and 80s, it was hit or miss. Mm-hmm. And when they hit, they really, really hit. And then when they missed, sometimes they really missed.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, I go back to the phenomenon of a lot of 80s films where they were better than most people remember them and got us that second wind in VHS at that time. So, but let's talk about some of the reviews and critical response to The Clue. The film was initially received with mixed reviews. Janet Maslin of the New York Times wrote negatively of the film and stated that the beginning is the only part of the film that is remotely engaging. After that, it begins to drag. Similarly, Jane Siskel of Siskel and Ebert, and of course of the Chicago Tribune, gave the film 2.5 out of 4 stars, writing, "Clue offers a few big laughs early on, followed by a lot of characters running around on a treadmill to nowhere." Yeah, that's more appropriate than you realize. Siskel particularly criticized the decision to release the film to theaters with 3 separate endings, which we're going to get to, calling it a gimmick that would distract audiences from the rest of the film, concluding that Clue is a movie that needs 3 different middles rather than 3 different endings. Our good friend Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times gave the film a 2 out of 4 stars review, writing that despite a promising cast, the film's screenplay is so very, very thin that the actors spend most of their time looking frustrated as if they'd just been cut off right before they were about to say something interesting. On Siskel and Ebert at the Movies, both agreed that the A ending was the best while the C ending was the worst. Well, again, we'll get to these endings. The film critics aggregator website Rotten Tomatoes reported that 62% of critics have given the film a positive review based on 29 reviews with an average score of 5.96 out of 10. The critic consensus reads, "A robust ensemble of game actors elevate The Clue above its schematic source material, but the farce reliance on novelty over organic wit makes entertainment value a roll of the dice." On Metacritic, the film has weighed an average score of 36 out of 100 on 11 critics. Only 11 critics, come on now. Generally unfavorable reviews. So let's talk about some home video releases. There you go. Oh, okay. What's this? Let me check my shoe real quick. let's talk about the video releases. This movie was released to home video in VHS format in Canada and the United States in 1986 and on February 11th, 1991 to other countries.
Wow.
The film was that's a big gap. The film was released on DVD June 2000 and on Blu-ray August 7th, 2012. It's never really had a real deep DVD or Blu-ray release, which is surprising because I would think there was a lot of extras in this film, but maybe there's just hard to come by footage with this. But let's talk about what has made this film so unique. The fact that it had three endings, and when it was released in theaters, it was random as to which ending you were going to get.
Which I think is so cool. Like, that is just awesome. Sorry.
So let's hit each ending, starting with ending A. Yvette murdered the cook and Mr. Body on orders from Miss Scarlet, for whom she once worked as a call girl. Scarlet then killed Yvette and the other victims, planning to sell the guest secrets. Scarlet prepares to shoot Wadsworth, who asserts there are no more bullets, and disarms Scarlet as law enforcement raid the house. The Evangelist, revealed to be the police chief, congratulates Wadsworth, an undercover FBI agent. Wadsworth attempts to demonstrate the revolver was empty, but a remaining bullet brings down the chandelier, narrowly missing Mustard. So that was ending A. Mm-hmm. Ending B. Mrs. Peacock killed all the victims to conceal her taking bribes from foreign powers. She holds the others at gunpoint while escaping to her car, but is caught by the Evangelist, who is revealed to be the police chief. Wadsworth reveals he's an undercover FBI agent sent to investigate her.
For she's and a jolly good fellow.
Which nobody can deny. Ending C. Professor Plum missed Mr. Body with the gunshot, but later killed him with the candlestick. Mrs. Peacock stabbed the cook, her former employee. Colonel Mustard bludgeoned the motorist, his driver during World War II. Mrs. White strangled Yvette out of jealousy and hatred for the latter's affair with her husband, and Miss Scarlet clubbed the cop whom she was bribing. Wadsworth reveals he shot the singing telegram girl and is the real Mr. Body. Plum killed his butler. With his accomplices disposed of, he planned to continue blackmailing the guests. Mr. Green kills Mr. Body with another gun, revealing he is an undercover FBI agent. He brings in the chief to arrest the others, declaring, "I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife," revealing that his earlier stated homosexuality was merely part of his cover. So here's where it gets interesting. The home video, television broadcast, and on-demand streaming by services such as Netflix include all three endings shown sequentially, the first two characterized as possible endings, but the third, ending C, being the one true ending. The Blu-ray and DVD, however, give you the option to watch the ending separately, chosen randomly by the player, as well as the home entertainment version ending with all three of them stitched together. So I've got to ask for each of you, Haley, what was your favorite ending?
I like A and then I like C.
Carl?
Yeah, I used to always like C the best, but I think I'm coming around to liking A the most. I think C is the most fun, but it also makes the least amount of sense.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think C is the most fun ending. I think A is actually the best ending.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of ending B. It just felt anticlimactic to the film. I think ending C, though, it's hard to top Michael McKean in ending C.
And
Tim Curry's talking about what a good shot he is.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, so what do you what did you guys think of the fact that was it intentionally made to be a gimmick to try to get more people to go see the movie repeated times, or were they just having fun on the whole Clue aspect of it?
I think it's both. I think they were really truly having fun. And didn't necessarily want to release all three endings, you know, like we get now with your Blu-ray or your DVD. And so to make it more fun, but also to kind of shorten the film and maybe keep it at a time frame in the movie theaters a certain time. So I think it's both.
What about you, Carl? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely think it's both. I mean, it's a clever way of, if people like the movie, to get them to go see the movie two or three times just to find out what the other endings are. I don't know how successful that was. It sounds like, at least critically, it didn't work out that way. And I'm glad that the way they did it on the VHS tape is they managed to stitch them together and gave you all three. I actually have the DVD, and the funny thing is every time I've tried to do the random choice, it always ends up being ending B. So I don't know if there's a glitch on my disc or what, but that's the only ending I ever get that way.
I do like hitting the random one, and because you never know which one you're going to get. I think I get A more than I get the other two.
Okay.
Yeah. I've gotten A quite a bit. So now the soundtrack was never released until actually February 2011 when La La Land Records released the John Morris score for the film as a limited edition soundtrack CD.
I want to find this because I really enjoy it. I think the music does such a good job in lending to the suspense and the comedy and the action of the film. Really, really paying attention to that last night when I watched was I really like the music of this. And who doesn't like Shake, Rattle, and Roll?
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Now, here's where it gets interesting is the filming locations. Clue was filmed on sound stages at the Paramount Pictures Film Studio in Hollywood. The set design is credited to, I'm going to butcher these names, I already can see it coming, Les Gobergreig, Gene Nolman was, and William B. Majorand. That's just not right. It's not fair. I'm going to say that right now. The set decoration by Thomas L. Roysden. To decorate the interior sets, authentic 18th and 19th century furnishings were rented from private collectors, including the estate of Theodore Roosevelt. After completion, the set was bought by the producers of Dynasty, who used it as the fictional hotel, the Carlton. Hmm. All the interior scenes were filmed at the Paramount lot, with the exception of the ballroom scene. The ballroom, as well as the driveway gate exteriors, were filmed on location at a mansion located in South Pasadena, California. The site was destroyed in a fire on October 5th, 2005. Exterior shots of the Pasadena mansion were enhanced with matte paintings to make the house appear much larger, and these were executed by matte artist Sid Dutton in consultation with Albert Whitlock. The house is just as much of a character in this movie as the actors are. This is kind of house you almost would like to live in and find all these secret passages and everything like that. It's like, it's a little creepy, but it's kind of cool too.
Definitely. I think that would be really fun. Although I wasn't crazy about the lamp, but clearly the pole of the lamp was a snake. I don't know if you guys caught that. Yeah. Like, not a fan of that.
No.
You just know your daughter would be driving you nuts running through secret passages.
Probably.
What about you, Carl? Would you want to live in the Clue house?
I don't know if I'd want to live there. I would definitely enjoy visiting and hanging out and checking it out. And I love the way that they basically, at least on the main floor, completely recreated the board game, because the board is laid out exactly the same way. The secret passages go to the same places that they do in the movie. It's just a clever way of tying it back again to that board game roots that it has.
And the parquet flooring.
Yeah, and the parquet flooring, exactly.
Can never beat a good parquet floor.
No.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to have some trivia on Clue. So just sit back, relax. We're going to tell you what else is on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, a weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Well, we hope you're enjoying everything that we're putting out as we try to feed your ears, especially during this lockdown and quarantine time, as you try to find different forms of entertainment, because I know the TV's getting a little thin these days. So let's talk some trivia, though, because there's some very interesting trivia to talk about. We talked about this a little earlier. A different scene was shown at ending was shown at each theater. In some cities, the newspaper print ads indicated which version was being shown at each theater. That's kind of interesting in the aspect of maybe because it gave people a chance to go see it again and make sure they were getting something different, Haley.
Yeah, I think so, definitely, you know.
And Carl, you kind of brought this up earlier. This is the first movie based on a board game.
Okay.
It's probably better than any video game movie that's been ever been made. So.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit of casting. What if John Cleese was considered for the role of Wadsworth?
He's too funny.
Yeah.
I don't think he could have pulled off like the serious funny enough. Although he is hilarious.
Yeah, he is hilarious. Tim Curry's facial expressions really work so well in this movie, too. We brought it up a little earlier too. Madeline Kahn's short flames on the side of my face monologue about her hatred for Yvette, the French maid, was completely ad-libbed.
So good.
Flames on the side of my face. Breathing. Breathless.
Now, this is one that I find very interesting, especially for our Star Wars fans who listen to this. According to an interview with writer and director Jonathan Lynn, after a screening on the 25th anniversary of the movie's release, Carrie Fisher was originally cast as Miss Scarlet until she ended up in rehab for drug addiction 4 days before filming started. Fisher called Lynn and agreed to work to a work furlough, which received approval of her clinical doctors and the producers, but was vetoed by the production insurance company, forcing Lynn to dismiss her from the project. Luckily, Anne Warren was a last-minute replacement. And I think it worked out well.
It's so crazy. When I read that one, I was like, wow, wait, Carrie Fisher? I mean, all actors, you know, for the most part, want to do comedy if they feel that they have the chops for it and they want to do it. So I don't know if I can picture that, though.
I've seen her do some comedy. She is capable of pulling off some comedy, Carl.
No, I agree. But the comedy I've seen her do is not quite the same. The character would have been very different, I think. And I'm having a hard time picturing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if Carrie Fisher could have had the vampness to her that Leslie Ann Warren carried with this character.
Yeah.
So. She would have played the ending, that the A ending where she was the murderer, I think, really well. I struggle with the vampy part.
And I think this one is actually very timely relative. Professor Plum indicates at dinner that he works for the World Health Organization, part of the United Nations organization, which means he works for Uno Who.
Oh, that's great.
Here's some more possible casting news. Jennifer Jason Leigh, Demi Moore, and Madonna were considered for the role of the buxom French maid Yvette. Eager to earn the part, Colleen Camp went to her audition in a French maid's costume. In a 2013 BuzzFeed retrospective, writer and director Jonathan Lynn admitted that although he was impressed with Camp's comedic acting skills, it was her well-endowed figure that ultimately convinced him there was no avoiding it.
Oh my. Wait, how old was Jennifer in 1985, like in
1985?
Early 20s. Okay.
Yeah. Got it.
It was like,
yeah. I'm like, she was really, but to me, wasn't that much older either.
No. So. Yeah. Interesting.
Here we go. In an example of attention to detail, the secret passages movie lead to the same rooms they do in the board game. The kitchen leads to the study, and the conservatory leads to the lounge. So great little things. We talked about the set being used by the producers of Dynasty, who use it as the Carlton Hotel. The three main female suspects, Eileen Brennan, Madeline Kahn, and Leslie Ann Warren, were Academy Award nominees for Best Actress in a Supporting Role at different points in their careers. So some real acting chops in this film. You talked about this too, Haley. The characters' cars are the colors they are given as their pseudonyms.
Yes. Which I never noticed before. And then as I was watching it this last time, I was like, oh, that's really fun.
Yeah.
So Professor Plum hypothesizes that to the group that the brandy was poisoned. In the original version of Clue and Cluedo in the UK, the board games, poison was included among the possible weapons and later reintroduced in the 1990s game Clue Master Detective.
Yep. I had to put that one in there again because I love this board game so much, and there's been so many different versions of it that the one I have now has the poison in it, and it didn't before. So, yeah.
Yep.
Let's talk about remakes or a TV series. This movie has a very interesting remake attempt history. Universal Studios announced in 2011 that a new film based on the game was being developed. The film was initially dropped, then resumed as Hasbro teamed up with Gore Verbinski to produce and direct. In August 2016, the tracking board reported that Hasbro had landed at 20th Century Fox with Josh Fieldman producing for Hasbro Studios and Ryan Jones serving as the executive producer, where Daria Krekic was overseeing for Fox. The film would be a worldwide mystery with action-adventure elements, potentially setting up a possible franchise that could play well internationally. Then, in January 2018, Fox announced that Ryan Reynolds, who has established a three-year first-look deal with the studio, would star in a live-action remake of Clue with Rhett Reese and Paul Rennick, writers for the Reynolds-led Deadpool, its sequel and life, as scriptwriters. In September 2019, The Wrap reported that Jason Bateman was in talks to direct the film, but by February 2020, Bateman was no longer attached to it, and instead, James Bobbin had been in talks with 20th Century Studios for directing the film. This thing's all over the map.
Lots and lots of talk. That's all I see, and that's perfectly fine with me, because, again, I think this is one of those films, like, just leave it alone. You don't need to remake it to reintroduce it to people with, you know, with actors who are hit now. You know, I really hate this culture of like, let's just make a remake a movie with newer actors and put it back out there. Sometimes it's great, but then sometimes not so much. And I love this film way too much to see that happen.
So let me ask, to both of you, and Carl, I'll let you answer first. If they were to do a remake, if they were finally able to get something on the ground, do you think it would work better as a movie, or would you like to maybe see him make it as a short episode, maybe like 6-7 episode TV series, where maybe they could go into a little bit more backstory of each character?
So first of all, I'm with Haley. Like, just don't do it. Period.
I can agree.
If they had to do it again, I would prefer it just to be a movie. I almost feel like a film like Knives Out that just came out last year kind of fits that mold well enough that you can do something kind of like a Clue movie, but not. And this movie got a bad rap for having a thin script. I don't know how you would stretch this out for multiple episodes unless you just took the name as a name recognition thing and then did something completely different that had nothing to do with the game. I mean, the thing that I love about this movie is that it's Clue. It's based on a board game, and that board game does play out over the course of a 90-minute film, and it works great. So I don't know how you would improve upon that other than attempt to make money off of it.
What do you think, Haley?
I can see what Carl's saying. I think that, you know, if you wanted to do something as far as like a short season, it would have to be just like a one season thing and just a couple episodes. You know, you could maybe go a little bit more into the whodunit kind of stuff, but it'd be really hard to add more to the script, I think, and make it still work. So as far as like a film goes, I really would just rather them not make a new one. Just because I think I haven't seen Knives Out, but it's on my like to watch list. And I've heard that it's really great and kind of that whodunit kind of style, and make something new in a whodunit style.
Yeah, I agree with the Knives Out feeling on that as well. Well, I think they're still going to eventually remake this because that's just what Hollywood does. Yeah. I'm interested if Ryan Reynolds is attached, because I could see him playing like a Mr. Green or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
It'll be interesting. But here's something interesting. They actually did a novelization of this film. The novelization was written by Michael McDowell based on the screenplay by Jonathan Lynn. There was also a children's adaptation entitled Paramount Pictures Presents Clue, the storybook written by Landis, Lynn, and Ann Matthews. Both adaptions were published in 1985 and differ from the movie in that they feature a fourth ending cut from the final film. In this ending, Wadsworth says that he killed Body as well as the other victims, and then he reveals to the guests that he has poisoned them all so there will be no witnesses and he will have committed the perfect crime. As he runs through the house to disable the phones and lock the doors, the chief detective, who had earlier been posing as an evangelist, returns, followed by police who disarm Wadsworth. Wadsworth then repeats the confession that he had given earlier to the guests, physically acting out each scene himself. When he arrives at the part about meeting Colonel Mustard at the door, he steps through the door, closes it, and locks it, leaving all the guests trapped inside. The police and guests escape through a window while Wadsworth attempts to make a getaway in a police squad car, only to hear the growling of a Doberman Pinscher from the back seat.
I did read about this, that there was like a fourth ending, but they felt it was a little too gruesome, so they decided not to add that. And also, I think in ending B, the chief was actually supposed to have shot Mrs. Peacock, and they determined that that probably was a bit much, so they cut that out.
So obviously when we talk about merchandise and games for this movie, I think we know exactly what we're going to be talking about, and that is the actual board game of Clue. Little history on it. Cluedo was developed in 1943, manufactured by Waddington's in 1949. It has had several reiterations since then and is currently owned by Hasbro. In the 1950s, it was marketed as the Great Detective Game, and in the 1960s, it was Parker Brothers Detective Game. It was relaunched with a new version in 1972. Both Waddington's and Parker Brothers have produced their own versions between 1949 and 1992. 8 editions of Clue were produced in the U.S. 1949, 50, 60, 72, 86, 92, 96, 2002. But only 3 editions of Cluedo were released in the U.K. 1949, 1996, and 2002. I think there's a lot more versions of Clue these days than just that, Haley.
Well, yeah. Well, there's all the, there's Harry Potter Clue and Walking Dead, you know, because it's much like Monopoly. You have to have like all the TV shows of it. But if you want to break it down to the bare bones of just the game itself, the basic premise of this game, that's how many editions. Like I have a Downton Abbey Clue, but the premise of the game isn't the same in these television TV show versions of the games. I actually grew up, we had the 1972 version. And I love the board game. Listeners, go take a look, Google the game, and look at the different boards because they're all a little bit different. And so I'm on the hunt for a 1972 one because I love the style of the rooms. Like the kitchen has like this floral thing that I'm pretty sure was in the house I grew up in till I was 4 with like the awful shag carpet and stuff. But yeah, super fun.
What about you, Carl? You were talking a little bit. You used to play Clue with your parents?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure we had the 1986 version of it. At least that sounds about right for when I would have started playing. We also had that Master Detective one that had more rooms and people, and it was just more stuff in the game. The game was the same. It just had more things that you could play around with, and you could like sneak looks in people's, because you had these cards that you had clues and stuff. So you could sneak a look in there. Hands and stuff, but it was basically the same game. But yeah, I would love to check out that 72 game. It sounds really interesting, just the layout of it.
Yeah, the 72 one was really fun. The lead pipe, I remember, kind of had like a little dent in it.
Yeah,
it
had the little bent.
Bend in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that one just, I love the look of it. The box was fun because the boxes all had it's basically the same look to them for the most part. They just kind of updated the clothing a little and whatnot and how people were looking on the box, but it's super, super fun. I think, yeah, the one I've got now has like, it's got some interesting stuff. There's a trophy and a dumbbell. There's a spa and like the rooms are kind of different too, which is kind of sad. I loved like the original, just give me the original rooms that they had, but it's still such a fun game.
One of the things I always remember about the Clue board game too was the player cards and the actors that they would always get, because at least especially in the 80s, it was always like an actual person in that they took a picture photo of for the role. I know there was some where it was a drawn picture or something like that as well, but usually it was always a photo of somebody, and they were just so outrageous.
Yeah. Did you play that game? Do you remember playing it?
I played it a few times. The problem I had with it was it was not a board game my parents would readily play because my dad was a cop and my mom worked in the court system. So yeah, they were not. I think that was just a little too close to home for work purposes.
That's too funny.
So, but now as we kind of wrap things up here, I'd like to give each of you a chance to kind of your personal reflections on Clue and where it stands now? And would you recommend it to friends? And where would you put it in your personal collection? Carl, you've been so great to be here. Why don't you, well, we'll start with you on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's still one of those movies that I love and I always think fondly of, and I would always be happy to sit down and watch it. How does it stand up? I'm wondering how much of that is just because I grew up in the 80s. I grew up with these 80s films. I wonder if somebody who is, say, 15 now, if they would enjoy it so much now just because it's kind of a quaint film versus what you get these days, I would say, in movies. It's kind of a throwback. I would certainly show it to them, and I might, you know, give them some side eye and judge them harshly if they didn't enjoy it. But again, maybe it's just a product of its time. It's definitely up there in my personal collection. I've bought it at least twice now, I would say. It's one I go back to on a regular basis, especially every once in a while you sit down and want to watch something fun, and that always jumps to the top of the list when you just want to watch something fun.
Haley, I know this movie is near and dear to your heart.
It is. And I first have to say, I'm not shouting. All right, I'm shouting. Anyway, no, I love this movie. A couple years ago, like, I've had it on my DVD collection for a long time, and my kids started watching it. And I think the first time I was watching it, she was in the room. She wasn't really paying attention. And finally now she loves it and gets upset, like, if I'm going to watch it without her. And so I think it's one of those things where, you know, if people sit down and they watch it and they've never seen this movie before, it's just one of those films that's just going to give you some really good laughs, which, let's be honest, all right now we could use for sure. Mm-hmm. But you're going to just have some fun with it because it's silly and it's ridiculous, and that's perfectly okay. And these characters work so well together and they run with it, I think. And I can only imagine the fun that they had on set doing this film. It is definitely up in my, I would say, in my top 20 favorite films of all time. And you definitely should check it out. I've run into people now who still have never seen this. And I get it that, you know, if it didn't do as well as it did in theaters in 1985, that potentially a lot of people don't know about it. But I will tell people to watch this. I will even say, here, you can have borrow my copy and take it home and watch it, because it's just such good fun. And good family fun. Like, my kid is, I think she watched this probably the first time. I don't know. She might have been like 8. Like, yes, some of the jokes in there she's not going to get, but I watched Scooby-Doo and there was a lot of adult content in there that I didn't get as a kid. And that's okay, because it was still really funny. So, yeah.
Now, I think you hit it on the head, Haley. This is a cult classic film at this point, and I think that in a way makes it timeless, because the setting of this movie and the time frame it takes place in is timeless. It's And I think that helps, because it's not one of these ones that relies on the pop culture of the time. Mm-hmm. Or anything, so it doesn't have anything that ties it to a certain time period necessarily. Yes, there's some history involved and things they're talking about, but I think for the most part you can watch this at any time and understand the history of it. And I think it is one of the all time great performances by Tim Curry, and I think that is always going to stand out. And I think too, when we look, especially when we look at Tim Curry and his health these days and everything like that, it makes us appreciate this film even more. And I think this is one of those films that's going to be generational, and it's going to be around for a very long time, because there's not a lot of films that are like this movie. Yeah. And I think it's actually a film that, if you're going to show the history of movies, it's a great film to put in. To say, here's something that just is different. Mm-hmm. And it's just different enough. And I think that's what makes it so great. And I've said it a couple of times. This is one of those 80s films that was way better than it was treated in the theaters, but it's now found a strong following and a love because of home video and word of mouth. And I think those are the movies that, for the most part, are going to stand out a lot more through the test of time than a lot of what were considered the big hit movies of the 80s as well. So,
well, and I think it's interesting. My theory on a lot of 80s films, I grew up watching them and I kind of appreciated some of them, but I've grown to appreciate so much more than I did probably a long time ago. Because you know what? It's a time capsule, and it's just, it's like 80s music. You know an 80s song when it comes on the radio because of the synthesizer and the keyboard in it. You're like, this is an 80s song. And you know an 80s film when you see it. And it's just something that, for the most part, most of them, the entire family could sit down. And like, some of the adult stuff might pass over the younger kids, but like, there's nothing super bad that the whole family can't join in on a watching of an 80s film. Like today, so many films, you're like, nope, not yet, not yet. You got to wait for a while. I think there's just, this is one of those films where everybody can sit down, grab some popcorn, and pop this on and have fun. I love it so much that my best friend at FanX a few years ago, she went, and Tim Curry was the headliner. And I couldn't go. And if I could have gone, she had the package and got a photo op with him. And she was going to let me join in on the photo op. I couldn't go. So she actually got an autographed poster of Wadsworth, and he's holding the tray and brought it to me. And I was so happy when she gave that to me because he's just amazing. I love Tim Curry in this film, I think, so much.
Yeah. And with that, it's time to reveal the envelope at the end of the podcast to see who done it. And from what I can tell, it was Kevin M. Reitzel taking out Amy Nelson.
Yes.
With the lead pipe.
Because like but I said, really I didn't do it.
Yeah, but because but really it was all Haley. When we're just kind of scared of her because what she would have used was would have been a paper cutter. So
maybe who knows?
But I want to thank my guests, Carl. Thank you for joining us here on the Phantom Podcast Network for this Couch Potato Theater. We hope we haven't scared you off, and maybe we'll get you back for future movies.
I would love that. Thanks. This has been fun.
And of course, Haley, it's always good to do podcasting with my Sestra.
Yes, it is always such a joy, and I'm so glad that you were totally on board with doing this movie.
Yep. So you're up in the rotation for selecting another film here soon. So
all right,
just so you're aware. So again, we want to thank everybody for listening to this Couch Potato presentation of Clue, and you know what? We will see you next time on the couch, or it might have been with the candlestick too, Haley. I'm just saying.